There's no such thing as a free lunch. Milton Friedman.
Chapter 3. Factors. Monday night, 9:38 p.m., marathon deal finally closed. He looked at me and said, "If it breaks, I'll fix it." I replied, and I began to tell him how expensive the electronics are, how our labor rate was over $100 an hour, how many of the diagnostics could only be performed at the selling dealer. Then he said, and I'm not lying, "Well, if it breaks, I'll just trade it in." Our customers should know better, but they often don't know or understand the facts. So what are the facts? Fact number one, most of your customers have very little savings available for emergencies or unexpected hardships. Fact number two, most of your customers have very little idea about the actual cost of ownership or reliability. During times of economic prosperity, people don't fear being sold, because spending a little bit extra money isn't a big deal when you have more than enough. But today, Americans are finding that they have less disposable income as inflation continues to grow. So, they will make what they perceive to be the most dollar-saving decision possible based on their perception. For some, the word no is like a lower payment coupon. We must learn to intelligently discuss our products as it relates to saving people money if we want them to consider the benefits. Many people don't realize how much has changed in the last 20 years. Overall, inflation is up 48.9% on basic goods and services, but over 250% for most vehicles. That's right, inflation is up 48.9% and wages are only up 2.9%. Meanwhile, household income is stagnant, barely moving, from $61,399 in 2000 to $63,179 as of 2018. This presents more need than ever for our customers to protect their budgets. More importantly for F&I managers, the cavalier attitude that people used to have with their money from 20 years ago is gone. People have changed. Customers today have no choice but to spend wisely or risk the quality of their life. How we got here. From 1945 to 1965, Americans had the highest standard of living in the world. Our production and employment were high, and we made some of the best products on earth, largely because the rest of the world had been blown to pieces during World War II. We had a robust economy, we had lots of disposable income because everybody was making money. Additionally, inflation was capped by the Federal Reserve holding gold prices at $35 an ounce. Times were good. But in 1971, things began to change, and we've basically been in an economic decline since. The U.S. government decided to no longer convert dollars to gold, which had been the standard policy since 1933. The American economy that worked very effectively in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s was beginning to unravel. The theme in the 1970s became recessions and hardships. Nixon stepped down from the presidency. Oil embargoes resulted in a lack of gasoline, and inflation began to outpace wages. We had years of boom and bust, with inflation gradually outpacing household income, but it was manageable with the exception of a few recessions along the way. Many people found economic success by outworking and outrunning inflation until 2008. In the 2008 recession, almost everyone struggled. The automotive industry was no exception. Many dealers didn't survive. While adjusting to the new economy, F&I managers began sharing with me that their word tracks were becoming less effective, as if all the customers had become a little more cynical. During that period of time, I felt I needed to take a hard look at F&I in the new environment, so I began taking occasional F&I spending assignments in distinctly different environments, independent stores, highline stores, even recreational. The basic enjoyment of working inside the dealership with customers again didn't hurt my spirits. I quickly discovered that the F&I training that I had been taught in the early 1990s, all the closes that I had been teaching to hundreds of F&I managers, were indeed less effective. People were more cynical. I knew I would have to change if I wanted success. Rather than presenting products and trying to overcome objections all the time, I shifted my thinking. For the first time in my career, I was having real conversations with my customers about their goals for the vehicle. I began to see products like service contracts, Gap, and Paint and Fab as ways to protect their budgets instead of just ways for me to make gross. Surprisingly, the gross was still there, but my attitude was completely different. My product count went way up. My chargebacks went way down. By not selling, I actually sold more. Now, today I understand why. I was focused on helping people, not selling people. The difference is paramount. I didn't apply the 300% rule. Instead, I listened to people, I shared with people, I kept my process transparent, and I ran the highest numbers ever. The truth about people. Mark was a very polished and persuasive sales manager for a large Toyota store. He averaged over $200,000 a year in the same store that he had been in for the last 5 years. So why was he broke? The same reason most Americans are. Almost all of us engage in some pretty dysfunctional behavior and, we don't want to talk about it. But it's true. It's our culture. The more we make, the more we spend. For most, more money means nicer clothes, nicer houses in nicer neighborhoods, nicer cars, more entertainment, the newest smartphone, more dinners out at nicer restaurants, more money given to friends or family with their own problems, etc., etc. What it does not mean is more money set aside for savings and rainy days. As a culture, we simply don't save. That said, let me be clear. This is not criticism. It's only information. I will not criticize people for having nicer things or a better life. Nicer things create a better quality of life, and sometimes we need that, myself included. We need rewards for working hard. Otherwise, what's the point? When we reward ourselves, we get a dose of dopamine, the feel-good chemical. Our brains release it when we feel achievement or success. This is absolutely critical for our well-being. But we care about our loved ones too. So we put in the hours to provide a better life for them. This behavior tells our brains to give us a dose of oxytocin, the warm, fuzzy drug that our brains release when we give of ourselves to others. This is something that we feel around teams, units, clubs, strong families, etc. It comes from belonging to something greater than yourself, and it is absolutely critical if you want to feel complete. Missing either one of these chemical emotions can leave you unbalanced. For instance, you could have a fat bank account but still feel empty inside. Alternatively, you could feel a deep devotion to family, friends, or loved ones, but still feel like purpose or achievement are still missing. We get oxytocin when we help other people. We get dopamine when we help ourselves. We need both in balance for happiness. Too much or too little in either direction, and you can quickly become unbalanced and unhappy. Let's say that I spend all my time crushing it. Everywhere I go to the gym and I crush it. I go to work and I crush it. My bank account is crushing it, and I'm filled to the top with dopamine. Could I still feel empty? Yes. I'll feel empty because I'm missing the oxytocin that comes from feelings of love and team. We need that feeling of love and acceptance too. This ties directly into our interactions with our customers. Our goal should be finding the perfect balance of dopamine and oxytocin. This is the key to finding happiness in the box too. By focusing on making money for ourselves, we create dopamine. By focusing on solving problems for our customers, we create oxytocin. When we can find the ideal blend of these two chemicals, our lives improve. In the box, we want to teach our customers about the products that will help improve the quality of their lives and create the best ownership experience, while getting paid nicely for providing those solutions. This, in my opinion, is the essence of good F&I. Most people either reward themselves or those that they care about. As a result, there's very little money left over. This is a core reason why your customer doesn't want to give you any more of their money. It's likely that their budget is already tight enough, regardless of their income. You might think I'm speaking about lower income customers here. I'm not. This is a similar story all the way from the buy here, pay here lots into the Porsche and Mercedes stores. Somewhere between 50 to 90% of the customers that walk through your door are on a tight budget. In 2016, Bloomberg did a story on earners making over $150,000 a year and found that half of them are nearly broke, that they had very little saved, and they couldn't miss more than a couple weeks at work before they fell behind on their bills. This is just another example that as a culture, we're so focused on right now that we don't plan for tomorrow. Although we see a trend of more people earning over $100,000 a year, we must also pay attention to the uncomfortable truth that $100,000 worth of goods in the year 2000 would cost $149,000 today. Wages are well below where they should be relative to advances in automotive inflation, and no relief is coming. When wages rise, the stock market falls. This is because corporations recognize that higher wages equal lower profits. So again, prices must go up, and the cycle will continue. Many families have been dealing with tight budgets for a long time now. Because money is tighter, people are focused on not getting sold. Even when products like prepaid maintenance can help them save money and have better control over their budgets, some people will still say no. That said, money will become even tighter if trends continue. The result will inevitably be more customers arguing over payments or surrendering to longer terms. Willpower and marshmallows. In the 1960s, a group of young children were part of a study on patience and deferring rewards for greater gain, or so they thought. The study was actually about framing. Researchers would bring each child into a room and then tell the child, "This is your marshmallow. You can eat it anytime you like, but if you're willing to wait until I come back, I'll give you another one." For some children, the researcher would walk out and within seconds the marshmallow was gone, eaten, and only an empty plate was all that remained. For others, they fought to control themselves. They'd sniff it, they'd lick it, they'd hold it, they talked to themselves about the dilemma that they were facing. Yet, there were a few that understood the goal clearly. Defer instant gratification now for a greater reward later. These are people that you don't have to sell. They are already listening and forming judgments and opinions based on data. They are making assessments of your character while waiting for the data on your products. But the deferred gratification group is getting smaller. Usually, we find ourselves sitting across from the customer that is completely concerned about one thing, getting the lowest payment today and not giving any consideration to the best payment, or the payment that solves tomorrow's problems. The lowest payment conundrum. Everyone wants the lowest payment, right? Well, how do we get there? By stretching out the term and skipping all the financial protection options. Probably not a good idea. This sets the customer up for higher finance charges, additional negative equity, and potential economic hardships. What is the best payment? Well, it's the payment that is designed to create equity and prevent economic hardship. An example of the best payment would be protecting themselves by adopting solutions for mechanical breakdowns, cost-effective servicing, and keeping their vehicle's appearance intact, as well as eliminating gaps in insurance coverage. Having the best payment simply means making intelligent choices, choices that will create the best ownership experience. Sometimes this can be difficult. Sometimes your customers are so focused on the lowest payment that they'll tune out anything that you say about products. Sometimes they fear the best payment when they should actually fear a breakdown, a need for gap, or just negative equity, because these types of events are far more traumatic than finding an extra $40 or $50 a month for protection. Recently, the CEO of a nationally known publicly traded lender told me, quote, "Many of our customers have less than $400 in emergency savings." Now, this is disturbing, and it's not just subprime customers. It's everywhere. Even customers shopping in high-line stores have very little savings. Now, some of you guys can relate. I often hear from F&I managers looking for new jobs, and they'll say, "I need to make at least 12 grand a month or it's not worth getting out of bed." But they too have very little saved, and then they go on to explain how they really need to get back to work right away, or else. We often want the best of everything. We want it now and without considering the true cost. That's why credit card companies are so profitable. It's also why customers skip important products like extended service contracts and gap insurance, only to find out later that a single repair or gap claim can economically devastate them, sometimes to the point where their rent or mortgage payments are in jeopardy. One unfortunate automotive event could ruin their credit for years. Even if they're able to use a credit card to finance their way through the current problem, it's not a quality solution. They could easily pay twice as much for a repair over time. And that assumes that they're paying a fair price for the repair. In the air conditioner example, we see an initial cost of $1,397.59 is more than doubled to a true cost of $2,917 after interest is charged by the credit card provider. The truth about vehicles. We are in exceptional times. Throughout all of human history, no one has ever owned anything quite like a modern car. Making all the pieces work together is an amazing achievement. This is the result of millions of human labor hours. Accordingly, vehicles today have more computer code than almost anything else ever made. More than smartphones, more than computers, more than the space shuttle, more than a fighter jet, even more than the Hadron Collider that we use for splitting atoms. Nothing else we own is like a modern car. What is a car exactly? It's just a metal cage with a bunch of parts from all over the world working together to help us travel. It's also likely to be the most technologically advanced thing that you or I will ever own. It is a machine that is powered by fire. It's forced to operate in incredibly hot and cold climates, designed to provide safety, security, and reliability, all while hitting potholes at 60 miles an hour. Many of today's vehicles have upwards of 100 million lines of code, making sure that each one of the 50 to 200 onboard computers are working. Many of these computers are system critical for the safety and proper operation of the vehicle. If they fail, it could mean failure to launch airbags or deploy ABS on the super important side, or just the inability to play your favorite song on the less significant side. When you think about it, this technology is why we buy newer cars, isn't it? In short, a car is an amazing accomplishment. Yet some of your customers expect them to always operate perfectly. Why? Is expecting flawless reliability a reasonable belief? All right, so I'm just going to say this, and I'm sorry, but all cars will eventually break down. It's true. Given enough time, parts will break. They will malfunction. They will fail. It's that simple. That said, some cars are better than others. Let's explore why. What do most corporations do? They pursue profit, of course. This is their primary objective. Yes, they may wish to innovate or they may have some noble philosophical goals at their core, but ultimately, they must create profit for shareholders or they face management turnover. Businesses require profits to remain in business, and CEOs must generate profits to keep their jobs. Quarterly reports, not ethics, determine CEO longevity in most cases. Not that CEOs are bad, but they have a responsibility to create profit and effectively compete against their competitors. This is not a secret. It's not as if the manufacturer even has a choice in the matter. It's an incredibly competitive marketplace. Revenue goals must be hit, and it's not easy to raise prices without losing customers. Very few automakers have a niche demographic of people with unlimited income to spend. For everyone else, automakers must try and balance manufacturing costs, maintain profit margins, and offer a product that is still price competitive in the marketplace. So, they have third-party companies bid on building the parts that they need. Of course, the third-party companies are also working on tight margins. After all, they had to be the lowest bidder to win the contract. They also need to provide a quality part or risk harming the brand's reputation. This is not always possible, and is the main reason why your customers can benefit from having a quality vehicle service contract. Any part can fail, regardless of the brand on the front of the vehicle. Sometimes an automaker will switch a part when they see the performance of that part diminishing too quickly. For owners of these cars, they will soon be on their own with a part that wasn't known to be inferior at the time that the manufacturer selected it. Test it. Imagine for a moment that you work for a major automotive manufacturer that sells a million units a year, and you've found a way to save 25 cents on each valve stem. This would save the company $100,000. Would you do it? If you answered yes, it's probably because your pay plan provides incentives for you to create a profit. Now imagine if instead of just valve stems, you were able to negotiate lower costs for every single part on the car. That basically, by only building the engine, transmission, frame, and body, and outsourcing everything else to third-party companies, your company would save $1,000 per unit and gross an additional $1 billion a year. How much incentive would $1 billion a year provide? Follow the money. Parts fail. This is why we have auto parts stores in every town. This is also why auto parts stores are thriving. If you invested $1 in the Dow Jones Industrials or the NASDAQ Composite Index in January of 2010, your dollar would be worth between $2.66 and $3.80 in January 2020, pre-corona. But if you invest that same dollar in auto parts providers such as AutoZone or O'Reilly, your dollar would be worth between $6.82 and $10.78. These auto parts companies have outperformed the general market by nearly 3-to-1. Would this kind of growth be possible if vehicles didn't incur breakdowns? No. If you're still not sure that vehicles break down, check the 2020 J.D. Power Dependability Study. Nearly every vehicle made had some problem within the first 3 years. Genesis was the best with 89 problems per 100 vehicles manufactured, and the worst had over 200 per 100 vehicles manufactured. That said, automakers know with relative certainty how their vehicles are likely to perform, and they provide their factory warranty coverage with that in mind. This is why the basic bumper-to-bumper warranty isn't very long on most cars. Of course, occasionally we see companies like Chrysler in 1997 and 2003, or Volkswagen in 2018, offer longer warranties to stimulate sales, but even then, the majority of the coverage is only on the engine and transmission, not on the third-party parts. Do your customers actually need coverage? Does your customer actually need a VSC, gap, or paint protection? To figure this out, we have to define exactly what the word need means to each one of us. What does the word need mean to you? In our customer's world, need might mean the customer needs a vehicle service contract because they're likely to experience a breakdown. Another customer might need a vehicle service contract because they have no disposable income left over. Another customer might need the VSC because at this point in their life, they can afford comfort and peace of mind. Conversely, another customer might just need to win in the negotiation. When I say win, I mean leave the car dealership without getting hurt, as they see it. Not being sold a bill of goods is what they feel that they need more than the protection of the product or service that you're offering them. It's emotional, not logical, but it is still a need. What your customers actually need. Each year, the American Automotive Association, AAA, completes a report on the average cost of ownership and operation of vehicles. They consider 7 different factors: maintenance, license and registration, insurance, fuel, tires, finance charges, and the big one, depreciation. While we cannot assist with things like fuel and license, taxes, or their insurance cost, we can have some influence on vehicle depreciation, maintenance, repairs, tires, and finance charges. These costs represent 62.9% of the overall cost of ownership and can be reduced through products like vehicle service contracts, maintenance plans, paint and fabric protection, cosmetic wheel protection, key fob protection, and even more attractive financing options. Test it. Do products really help? Imagine a car in excellent condition, with perfect paint, perfect interior, free of repairs, with plenty of warranty in place. It has a solid history of all its maintenance. Is it worth more than a vehicle in average condition with average wear? Keeping the car perfect adds value not only economically, but it also adds enjoyment, prestige, and it works to reduce people's anxiety. Fake news. Dave Ramsey says, skip the protection. And this is what the so-called experts on TV say too, but they don't bring any data. Instead, they only have opinions. They are not actually risk experts. Actuaries and underwriters are where I get my data. People on TV are just really experts in the entertainment business. Their job is to attract and keep viewers, period. If the viewers stop watching, the so-called experts become unemployed. Now, no one really regulates what is and isn't true. TV shows levy opinions, but they don't supply hard data. No one discusses actuarial rates or loss ratios for vehicles and insurance products, so instead, they just make statements of opinion. The media, similar to their advertisers, have very little restriction on what cannot be said or claimed. So often, opinions are presented as facts. The experts haven't been in the insurance business for over 2 decades, but I have. I've worked for and with some of the largest companies in the world. I understand risk and what it takes to build a vehicle service contract program from the ground up. That said, I always buy the VSC coverage on my vehicles, on furniture, cell phones, and etc. too. I like to have the real experts manage my risk. I had 9 claims over the last few years. Maybe I'm unlucky. Still, when something goes wrong, it's rare that it's a real problem. Claims paid. 1. A new iPhone, covered by AppleCare. 2. My O2 sensor, covered by my vehicle service contract. 3. Front strut, covered by my vehicle service contract. 4. A broken shifter cable, covered by my vehicle service contract. 5. My clutch sensor, covered by my vehicle service contract. 6. The water pump, covered by my vehicle service contract. 7. A strut connector convertible top, covered by the vehicle service contract. 8. A stain on my couch, covered by Guardsman. 9. A new printer, covered by Square Trade. In return, I received no major out-of-pocket expenses, no major loss of time, and no major inconvenience. The thing that I'm looking for when I consider insurance is what makes sense. So, if it's a quality program, I add it. Side note, I also pay retail pricing every time on my automotive products. Even though I could buy at cost, I don't. I want to have the same experience that my customer has, and I also want to support F&I profitability. Test it. Imagine that you are a professional mechanic and your car breaks down. Yes, you could fix it, but you shouldn't. Here's why. Good mechanics work quickly. If the repair guide says the job should take 1 hour, a master mechanic can finish it a lot faster. He can earn 2, 3, maybe even 4 hours of labor time for each actual hour of real time. In short, he'll lose a chunk of his own income by working on his own car. So, to put this in perspective, consider a different profession. Barber A averages 1 cut per hour, and Barber B can average 3 cuts in an hour. Who makes more money? This is basically the same thing. For the rest of us, the garage will still charge us whatever the labor guide says, regardless of how many actual hours the mechanic takes to complete the repair. Also, let's not forget that there are many different labor guides, and repair shops will always use what benefits them. The common labor guides are Aldata, Motor, Mitchell, and Chilton. I don't know about you, but I'm experienced and I don't know how to tell if a shop is being honest on labor hours or parts pricing without doing some research. I also don't want to haggle with multiple mechanics and garages trying to find the best deal in town. So, I buy a quality vehicle service contract on every car I purchase, and I let the insurance company babysit the repair facility for me while I drive away in the loaner. These are realities that the so-called experts on TV never mention. They never mention that the smallest failure could take hours to repair and cost thousands of dollars. They never mention reliability varies by make and model. They never mention the labor guides. They never mention anything about fair pricing from the mechanic. But if you want a second opinion, ask any mechanic how long it would take to diagnose a short in the wiring harness. Good luck getting a precise answer.